Hello, everyone. My name is Phil Blancato, and I'm CEO and President of Latimer Thalmann Asset Management. Today is July 29th, and actually today I'm staring out at the beaches of New Jersey on vacation, but wanted to take a few minutes out of my day to spend some time with you all to talk a little bit about the latest of the virus, the vaccine front, and economic data. As we move through the summer, some of the expectations around the diminishing virus because of heat haven't really worked out. Now, maybe that's because we're inside more with air conditioning, or it's a very contagious virus. As of late, though, some of the data from the last week is better. Certainly, there are reasons to be more optimistic than we've been in the last few weeks. One of the measures of consumer sentiment or optimism came out last week, the Consumer Sentiment Index from the University of Michigan, and it dropped. And the reason why I'm leading with that is because that's a concern. Remember, we've talked in the past about as the consumer goes, so often does the U.S. economy. And when the consumer sentiment is not good, that can present a problem. So when we look at that, and we know that the recent outbreak of corona has had an impact, people look at their confidence, how confident they are, and we generally look at a scale of between 50 to 130. That number had popped all the way back up to 98 recently on that scale. Well, it fell back down to 92, with the future expectations falling quite dramatically from 106 to 91. When I generally don't often lead with economic data, a bit of a change this week because that's a critical indicator. So much of what we've talked about is that if the U.S. consumer stays strong and confident in the marketplace that we will resolve this, over the long term, we should be okay. That number is a bit concerning, but it squarely is because of the rise, well, let's not be too direct, mostly because of the rise in cases in the four big states, California, Arizona, Texas, and Florida. When I look at those states and how they've done recently, it's exciting, or somewhat exciting, that the data is better. As of recent days, we're seeing a marked improvement in those states. And in fact, the seven-day moving average in all four of those states is trending lower. When I look at California specifically, their average per day for the last 7 days is 8,600. 2 weeks ago, that was 8,800, or a 3.5% decline. Texas, 8,079. 2 weeks ago, it was 9,078, an 11% decline. Arizona, a 19% decline. Florida, a 7% decline, so a significant improvement in the new cases per day. Now, it's still higher than where they were back in June, but definitely room for improvement. So the idea of wearing a mask and protecting yourself is working. So that's exciting news to see that that has worked as of late. When we look at the death count, and that's important because we don't want to move past this and not realize it does have a human tragedy associated with it. California has gone from 70 on average per week in early July to 103, a 30% increase. Texas, 46 on average to 229, 158% increase. Arizona, 40 to 74, obviously about 100% increase, 107. Florida, from 48 to 122. In the last few days, the numbers are better, but certainly that's reasons for concern. Now, we know that fatalities are a lagging indicator. It comes after the obviously stark increase in new cases. But certainly some reason for optimism that this is nowhere near where New York City ended up, with thousands and thousands of people passing away. Compared to their population size, this is still a relatively small number of people. So relatively good news on the fatality front. We obviously don't want to lose any lives, but certainly nowhere near as catastrophic as where we were. Globally, we still stand at about 17 million cases. 666,000 people have passed away. 5.7 million are active cases this week, and 11.1 million are still cases with an outcome. And obviously 10.5 million have recovered. So by and large, the fatality rate has fallen down to 3.92%. That number was up at 6% not long ago. So the improvement in our ability to keep people alive and out of the hospital is showing through. We worry so much about the pressure on hospitals, and truth be told, right now, that hasn't yet happened. In fact, when you look at places like Arizona, they're down from 59% of the people in ICU down to 57. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually a state with not a lot of hospital beds. There are 1,433 beds in use. 814 of those are for COVID. That number hasn't changed a heck of a lot in the last week. In fact, it's gone down a little bit, and they have 15% ICU capacity available. Interestingly, when they hit the highest number of new cases was back on June 29th at 5,415. Now they're down to 1,141 per average per day. So that's a real improvement. However, the ICU capacity is something we've been concerned about, and in the last week or so, it's trending lower. Florida is about flat with 16% of capacity. Some of the hardest hit areas like Miami-Dade are higher, but so far not overrun. Texas has had a pretty marked improvement. There are 1,348 available ICU beds versus 1,088 last week. And California, which is a state with a very large hospital system, has had seen a pretty marked improvement as well. 2,006 last week in the hospital due to COVID, today, this week 1,975, and still having roughly 37% of traditional hospital beds available and 26% of ICU. So the good news is the big four that have had the bulk of our problems as of late seem to be showing improvement. And in fact, when you really think about the United States in general, how are we doing on our total fatality standpoint? Well, certainly when we look way back when we were running 50% less new cases per day, believe it or not, our 7-day moving average of people passing away was 2,200. Now we're running 65,000 new cases a day, and our 7-day moving average is about 1,100, up a bit from the lows of 750, but certainly nowhere near where we were. So the second wave so far, concerning for sure, but by protecting older folks, people with pre-existing conditions, having better resources in the hospital system, drugs like remdesivir, which is getting people out of the hospital basically 65% of the time, using steroids and aerosols, things that traditionally help with asthma and pneumonia, are also helping to keep lungs clear, has actually proven to be a pretty effective therapeutic to get people out of the hospital. Recognizing cases sooner, and then more importantly, realizing that the younger population is getting it recently and are less susceptible to death has helped quite a bit as well, but we got to make sure that doesn't translate into older folks. And one thing we continue to hear is that the virus is mutating, like all other viruses. And there is this belief, speaking just with a health professional yesterday, that in localized systems where I live in New Jersey, you're seeing the virus be less impactful, less potent. And for that reason, perhaps we are winning the war on multiple fronts with less people getting sick. And that's the same case for places like Europe, which are seeing their case count actually spike up a bit for the first time in a while. Places like Spain, specifically Barcelona, enacting new rules where they have to wear masks in public even more so, shutting down bars, restaurants, and nightclubs because they are concerned about a recent spike, but nowhere near where they were. So the good news is that while we're managing the second wave, it's proving to be a good test case for what we need to do. By enforcing mask regulations in those states, it's proving to be helpful, and we're seeing a potential slowing down. In fact, when you look countrywide, the number of people speaking with their doctors and physicians about symptoms is down across the country other than three states, which are newer states that have not been as hit hard by the virus. So by and large, we have maybe begun for the second time to bend the curve. In this ebb tide of the summer, when things slow down, we have less traders in the marketplace, less new data, you know, it's important that we're getting some relief here. And it seems like we may be either finishing off with the first one, or it's the beginnings of it, or managing the second one, depending on how you want to look at it. But certainly no doubt that we are understanding how to manage this better. But nowhere near out of the woods. When you see the Florida Marlins perhaps have to end their season completely because of a number of the players showing COVID. Long Beach Island in New Jersey, 37 lifeguards, I think it was, or 27 lifeguards, came down with COVID at a party. A hospital system down in Florida where some of the residents went out to a party and 14 of them came down with the virus. There's no doubt that we have to have a lot of common sense in dealing with the virus because it is very contagious. And although the fatality rate is 6 times higher than the flu, and the flu is very contagious, this seems to be not only more contagious than the flu, but also a higher fatality. And for that reason, we're certainly not out of the woods yet when it comes to the spread, but definitely improvements of late. That's exciting. The next big piece of data for us is what is the federal government going to do? Will the federal government actually step up and actually find a way to continue to build a bridge to the other side of this? Meaning, will we have an effective way to continue to support it? Now, that's a bit of a double-edged sword, because on one hand, we want to make sure that we're not creating too much national debt, but on the other hand, we need enough money to get us through this. There's still estimates of nearly 60,000 businesses that could go out of business in the next year, small and medium specifically. That impact on our labor force could be significant, not to mention that if we have a situation where we fall into a deeper than expected recession, it could have a prolonged outcome. As of right now, though, what we're seeing initially is the federal government is talking about the next round of stimulus, probably another $1 trillion. But we're beginning to walk a tightrope. You see, for every dollar we make, we owe about 81 cents. That's better than most countries out in the world today. You think about it, Japan, for every dollar they make, they owe $2. For us, we've been able to manage this, sustain it for a period of time. But can, in fact, we continue to navigate this so that we add enough debt so that we don't fall in a very deep and prolonged recession, but at the same token, not add so much that our dollar begins to weaken, we lose our default currency status, perhaps our ability to be the number one economy in the world, and then impacting our interest rates, which would then go up significantly higher. And for those reasons, it is a tightrope. So far, we've added more money than any other country in the world, and I don't know how much we have to show for it just yet. It looks like our second quarter GDP, which is expected to be negative 40, we'll find out tomorrow for the first time how bad it really is. But my best indication, best estimates from the modeling that we're doing is I don't think it's going to be that bad. The data for the month of June is proving to be better than expected, and in fact, still probably the worst negative GDP of our lifetime, still a negative 20 to negative 25 at a minimum, but maybe not as bad as we originally thought. And that's because the growth of the economy in the month of June was actually pretty strong. Retail sales, as I talked about last week, year over year, are almost about flat. Online spending's up 70%. The consumer is in very good shape right now and continuing to use stimulus money that they've gotten from the federal government, as well as for those who are gainfully employed, beginning to spend some money on pent-up demand. But as I mentioned earlier, as confidence doesn't hold on, that could present a long-term problem. So when I think about the data that's come out as of late, and I'll leave the virus to the end today, one of the good data points we saw is housing. Housing came out with a continued set of data that looks really strong, and that goes to speak to some of the lowest mortgage rates in our lifetime, being able to get a 30-year mortgage at around 3 to 3.5%, depending on your credit quality. You're looking at the way we buy and sell homes. Actually, the existing home sales came in up 20% month over month, basically beating expectation. New home sales up 13%. We actually had a 13-year high in new home sales since in the month of June. Prices of home are up about 5%. So we're seeing the housing market hold on. And when the principal component of your life, your home, is, or your wealth, your home is really holding on there and maintaining its stability, that's clearly a very good sign that things are not as bad as we would have thought. Doesn't mean we're out of the woods. You don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. When we look at multiple other factors in the marketplace, there are still many that are down the worst in our lifetime. For example, earnings, how much companies earn for this quarter, are supposed to be a negative 40% based on projections. So far, they're negative 14 for earnings and negative 10 for sales. That's significantly better than expected, but only 200 companies have reported out of the 498 in the S&P. So still a ways to go here. We have a lot to navigate from the idea of, is the data going to be as bad as we expected, or is there the possibility that things could be marginally better? Hopefully that marginally better idea holds true, and in fact, we'll be able to survive the second quarter, use this next round of stimulus, which will probably looks like it's going to go through the small to medium-sized business as incentives to get people back to work. The idea of giving folks more money on the unemployment line than they earned while they were working seems to have lost favor, and incentives to drive people into the labor force seems to have picked up favor. But there's more to come before this bill is signed off by the president, and certainly we're going to need some more money to get us through this sort of unusual time in between the latest round of data and waiting for some sort of antivirus or vaccine or therapeutic to help get us through this. So on the data front, besides the ongoing earnings number, which is better, the consumer sentiment number, which is a little worse, and new home sales, the rest of the data has been pretty benign. We did hit the 30-year low on mortgages recently, and it's come up a bit since then, but not a heck of a lot to talk about as we struggle through the middle of the summer. I liken this to an ebb tide, that we see this period of time as waiting for the other shoe to drop, meaning can we get control of the second wave and will the data be as bad as expected? And then more importantly, are we opening up fast enough in the third quarter to be able to resume an economy that doesn't need support by the federal government, because too much debt would eventually put us in a very bad situation, causing inflation and us losing some of our economic power. So while it seems like a boring time right now, it actually is very important that we get through this period of time. So much has been made about schools. Think about the economic engine that schools represent. As kids go back to school, whether it's the local economy that benefits from kids being in school at the collegiate or high school, grammar school level, the ability for parents to go back to work, and how much it's going to impact our overall economic success, schools are critical. And as you can tell, the new normal is going to be a new normal. That is some sort of hybrid that we're not used to. My own kids going back to school probably just 2-3 days a week and working from home at times. Their sports season shortened considerably and only having a handful of games. Tournaments being canceled. Some teachers not able to go in because of an existing condition, so kids will be in class watching their teacher on a video screen. None of these things tell us that we're going to go robustly back to the economy where we were before. There is no golden lever to make things significantly better here. That's yet to be determined. And in fact, we have a ways to go as far as, you know, what our economy is going to look like based on this new normal. How many people will be back in the office? When you're in the office, it's easier to grow in the office around your colleagues than it is from home. We can maintain and sustain from home, but growing is another ballgame. And you're hearing those headlines a lot from some of the CEOs of major U.S. corporations. However, you know, there has been an effective growth of the economy outside of retail and leisure. The rest of the U.S. economy, specifically the banks, the healthcare sectors, and technology sectors, have done fairly well. I think we're going to come out of this earnings season and see there's going to be some winners from COVID and some real losers. And that's going to be the narrative of the next few weeks. Do we have enough stimulus to keep us going? As I mentioned earlier, is the earnings data going to be what we expected? And then how do we get through this? So on the how do we get through it part, certainly COVID and what it's done to the world continues to be like nothing we've ever seen before, and at least in the modern era. And in that sense, there's still some success in navigating the vaccines and therapeutics. And I kind of narrow it down to this. There's basically 165 vaccines and therapeutics under development. Of those, there's 18 that are in phase one. There are 12 that are in phase two. There are 6 that are in phase three and 1 that's approved. The one that's approved is the remdesivir drug. You've heard a lot about that one. That's the one that is working and basically helps roughly 65% of the people get out of the hospital in one way or another. So that's great news that we're seeing some success there. Those drugs in the timeline get us to a scenario where we're starting to figure out who the winners and losers are. And based on analyst estimates, it looks like the University of Oxford AstraZeneca drug is the one that's probably going to come out the winner, with Moderna and Pfizer right behind there. So the three big companies coming to market with a vaccine, and all of them are beginning trials, are those three. Now, those are the ones most likely to have success. Throw in one Chinese company and round it off with Johnson & Johnson. That's who looks like it's leading the way with trying to create something. On the antiviral front, much more along Gilead, which we know about. It's already successful. And then right behind them, a name that I've mentioned a few times, Regeneron, and then Eli Lilly, and finally Roche. All coming to market with a therapeutic that should just help us get better in order for the economy to hold on and get people out of the hospital. We accomplish two things. Reduce the fatal human impact, but allow us to open up the economy because there's a way to get better. One of the other interesting things is you're seeing all kinds of unusual happenings. So for example, right now there's a collection of drug makers, some of them I mentioned, that are teaming up to be able to share data as to who's getting their chemicals from which company, where are the chemicals available, and how they each can help each other facilitate the raw materials they'll need to be able to produce their drug. That's unique. So rather than being in competition with each other, they're actually more helping each other to be able to get through this scenario, because it is all hands on deck. We need to get the world working, not just from the economic standpoint, but the human tragedy. And so it's exciting to see that they're willing to share data and work together. One of the sort of oddities that came out is the president actually gave support to Kodak to produce some of the raw materials we need. Remember the old film company that we all grew up with that's been really kind of on a death knoll since the age of the digital camera? Well, they can produce certain chemicals, and their stock is up wildly because of it. That's one of those weird oddities that comes at a time like this. So some of it is also getting unwielding support from the Justice Department, believe it or not. Getting support to get things manufactured more quickly and trying to break down barriers, as well as the CDC and Office of Homeland Security to try and get a antivirus and, more important, the raw materials needed. So these are some of unusual moments that we're watching. Some other new updates on the vaccine front. Russia seems to really be pushing forward. That they believe by the middle of August, they'll begin to inoculate healthline workers with their vaccine. Now, they think they're that far along that they'll have a vaccine that they can use starting in mid-August for the most critical people. The Chinese firm, Sinopharm, is now has a vaccine readily available, and they'll begin to use it more widely by the end of the year, going through inoculating something for all of the Chinese military, eventually into the Chinese population. On our front, I've already mentioned the Oxford University opportunity with AstraZeneca. They have a 50,000 volunteer study that began on Monday in multiple countries around the world. Right next to them, Moderna also started on Monday, already past tense, with 30,000 people. That one could be readily available by both of them by November for global distribution if it all goes to pass us. We'll get this, then we'll find out, you know, how successful they were. And I find it hard to believe that both companies, which are in massive production right now, would not ramp up production unless they had this real outsized opportunity for success, and that looks like it's going to be the case for both of them. Pfizer and BioNTech are also in their phase 3 study, which also started Monday in 39 states around the country, Argentina, Germany, and Brazil, but also more importantly, partnering with NYU Langone here in New York City to see if the vaccine is effective as well over the next 2 months. So that's kind of amazing that we're at that point. If you think about it, we've talked so much about the drugs coming to market, but these are happening. These are real drugs going to market, being tested as we speak. And to be in a phase 3 trial would tell me we are much further along than we even realize from the overall context of it. One other quick point. Gilead Sciences, which is Remdesivir, is now approved in Canada as well. It's the one therapeutic that's working. And thank God we have it. Maybe that's what's helping keep the fatality rate down. I happen to catch a really interesting video from a friend of mine, Tom Howard, sent over to me. The video was of Dr. Richard Bartlett. Dr. Bartlett's out of Texas. He decided to use a nebulizer with a drug called budesonide. It's a drug typically used for pneumonia and asthma. By using it through a nebulizer and putting small aerosols into the lungs, it's helping clear up lungs and getting people out of the hospital. As he calls it, a quote-unquote a cure to get people better. He's at 100% success rate. You know, using some repurposing existing drugs has thought to long be an idea for us to have success with this process. So that is a good sign that a doctor with some ingenuity is using something that he has access to, and hopefully it gets tested and makes available for more folks, because that's exactly what we need. It's inexpensive at about $200 a dose. And more importantly, in just a few minutes time, 5 minutes, it can get people on the road to recovery. That is exciting that we're starting to think about things in a different way. When I look at this all together, yeah, we are in the middle of the summer. It is that ebb tide environment. Certain states look really good. Countrywide, our data seems to have improved quite a bit in the last 7 days. When I pull it all together, the stock market seems to be accepting it. We're now up on the stock market through the year, up roughly 1.5% year to date. We're still down about 3% from the peak of the market, but we're no longer down. Equally weighted, all the stocks looked at the same day were down the same way, not just a handful of big tech names. We're only down about 5% on the year. Stocks are not inexpensive. They're still trading relatively expensively. That's why you want to make sure your portfolio has a good balance to it of good quality bonds and good quality stock. I still think it's not a bad idea to hold on to a little bit of cash or conservative investments here, only because there's still plenty of unknowns. We don't have a vaccine yet. We're getting close. We don't have a therapeutic yet. We don't know how bad the second quarter data is going to be or how good the third quarter will be. There's still so many unknowns that are hard for us to gauge. I still think it makes sense to be conservative in this marketplace and just see how things play out before we decide to go all in on the stock market again. Not to mention there's a tumultuous election coming, and summers are usually pretty quiet for the stock market. With September being right around the corner, gosh, it's going to be a wild month. The election cycle, school or no school, people fully engaged at work again. How good is the third quarter? Was it strong enough to hold us up? It's going to be a pretty wild fall, I think, at least through the election, because post-election, we should have all kinds of information on therapeutics and antivirals, whether or not they're working, who won the election, where we are at economically, how strong was the third quarter, and are we sustaining going into the end of the year? Kind of amazing that all this seems to be flying by. The days just zoom on by as we go through this because there is so much to consider in a way that we haven't considered in the past. So when you put it all together, I think we're okay. We're in this, like I said, this kind of a lull environment right now. Not a terrible time, slightly better data on the virus front. We will continue to have these calls each week until we get through it and have a clear understanding of the two most important aspects of it, which is where is the virus spreading, and then more importantly, what can we do to stop it, and how are we going to be able to control it economically or impact it economically. Hopefully you're safe and sound where you are, enjoying the summer months. Like I mentioned, I'm down at the Jersey Shore with some friends and family, but didn't want to miss an opportunity to talk with you all, to check in and let you know what's the latest and greatest. Be safe wherever you are, wear a mask, and look forward to talking to you all soon. Thank you very much, and have a great week. Bye-bye.